Hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg, and this is The Deciding Decade. Often I talk about the next generation of leadership not waiting their turn. And when I say that, I'm not just thinking about people in their 20s running for Congress or my own experience running for president in my 30s. I found that many of the most powerful voices for change aren't just those running for office. In fact, many are not yet even old enough to vote. As we prepare for the decade ahead, it's important to think about what you might call the next generation, people who in their teens and early 20s are stepping up, stepping out, and showing us what 21st century activism looks like. I came to many of my own deepest held political and moral views as a teenager. And I wonder sometimes what that formation might have been like if I were in the high school class of 2020 instead of 2000, with instant access to the ideas of others in my generation through social media. We have a lot to learn from these voices, and so we're going to feature a few of these young leaders over the course of the next few weeks. One major issue where the younger generation is taking a lead is climate. From Fridays for Future to the global climate strike, some of the people who have taken the strongest stand on this issue, they're leaders in their teens. I want to introduce you to one such leader right now. I am really happy to kick off this special series with Alexandra Villasenor, who joins me today. Alexandria is a 15-year-old climate activist, founder of Earth Uprising, a youth activist group dedicated to educating and mobilizing young people on climate change. She is a veteran of Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Future movement and helped lead strikes in New York City for 65 consecutive weeks, even braving the cold of a polar vortex armed with a sub-zero sleeping bag. She speaks with the moral authority of someone whose life will be shaped by whether we succeed or fail in meeting the climate challenge. Welcome, Alexandria. It's an honor to have you here today.
Yeah, I'm very excited to be talking with you today.
So I want to start by learning a little more about your story. You were born and raised in Davis, California, and you and your family moved to New York City. You take a trip back to your hometown, and you find yourself within about an hour of terrible wildfires, something that, again, the West has faced over the course of this summer. And you find yourself suffering from asthma. Can you just take us back to that moment and tell us how that shaped your trajectory as an activist?
Definitely. So I first got involved in activism when I was 13 years old, and I'm now 15. So it's only been 2 years, but it feels like it's been a really long time. I am originally from Northern California. I was born and raised there, and I was in my hometown during Thanksgiving in 2018. And that was when the campfire in Paradise, California broke out. And so what was very scary about that experience was that my hometown was very close, so we ended up receiving a lot of the smoke from that fire. It was seeping into my home. At one point, it was the worst air quality in the world during that time. And so I have asthma, and it was making me very sick. And so my family ended up sending me back to New York City early from that trip. And what's very upsetting is that there's not a lot of public information about how to stay safe, even though right now the entire West Coast, 4 million acres are burning. It is a repeat of history almost for me. And I've just been continuously advocating and talking about California's wildfires. And so what happened in my community was one of the reasons that I ended up deciding to be an activist. So after getting back to New York City from the campfire, I started researching about climate change, and I saw the connection between climate change and California's wildfires. And that was the final moment for me that I decided that I had to do something. And so I took my first form of activism in the form of a school strike in front of the United Nations headquarters on December 14th of 2018. I ended up striking all the way up to the pandemic. So every Friday, that's over a year. And I'm now changing the ways that I'm doing activism, of course. But I also founded Earth Uprising, and we have just really started focusing on education because that is a very important component to combat the climate crisis.
So a lot of people turn up around the UN or around the White House holding up a sign. Not a lot of people touch off a mass movement when they do it. What do you think was different about your approach or your moment or whatever it was that clearly hit a nerve and set off something much, much bigger?
I think the reason that made this movement so much larger was that it was led by young people. And when young people are at the forefronts of a movement, we speak very bluntly and directly. I've noticed that when speaking with politicians, we really just speak our minds. And we also don't think about what is politically possible when it comes to the climate crisis. We think about what really needs to happen in order to take action. Young people have been using the resources that we've been given. My generation has technology and social media that we have really used to our advantage. I ended up getting connected with organizers after I started my climate strike. I got connected through social media with other young people all around the world. And so I was very fortunate to find other young people involved in this. And so it's a sense of community that we have built. And we are very strong and forceful in our message, but we're also very consistent.
So let's dig into that, because obviously, you know, I've worked mostly in the political space, and it's, you know, literally been my job to figure out what's possible. But I think it feels like part of what's happening now is what some are saying is possible is just in a very blunt mathematical way, not going to be enough. And at the same time, you know, we have to actually do something real, and that requires maneuvering around whatever obstacles there are, mm-hmm. political, economic, social, technological. So how do you think about that? How do you think about the need to have an agenda or a program that can be achieved and square that with the need to maybe stretch people's imagination about what possible actually looks like?
Coming from a 15-year-old, I'm not able to be involved in the political system for quite a while. So I won't be able to vote till I'm 18, which in my opinion is far too long. But I've noticed that young people are having a way and getting involved in the decision-making conversations. When we protest and we take direct action, it's one of the ways that we are actually being involved in policy. I have actually been able to get policy in New York City with the protests. And so young people, we are finding a way to make room for ourselves at these decision-making conversations, even if we aren't able to vote yet. And so I actually worked with Jay Inslee on his Evergreen Economy plan. And after he ended his presidential campaign, his former staffers founded Evergreen Action, which is a climate policy platform. And I'm on the advisory board for Evergreen Action. Great. I think it's very exciting that the Biden-Harris campaign has now adopted parts of that climate policy platform. So actually taking steps to incorporate all of these policies and making sure that we actually have an idea of what we need to do to have a sustainable future.
How do you think about who to address when you're trying to stir people to action or convince people? I mean, there are people who think they're on the right side of the climate issue, but you might feel they're not going far enough. There are people who say it's not even real. One of the things I've been thinking about in the political season, and you know, it's a question that comes up a lot in my party, is how much energy do we spend addressing the people who are still deciding how to vote? And how much energy goes to those who are deciding whether to vote at all, right? So when you're thinking about, you know, who your audience is, are you just thinking about it's everybody, or are you thinking about the people who just don't even believe this is a problem yet? Who's your target?
Well, everybody. I think that everybody needs to be an activist. And now is the time where everybody has to be involved in activism. And so one thing that I have been very open with is the idea that everybody is welcome and everyone is needed in this movement. We need people from all sectors and all backgrounds getting involved, because everybody has different experiences and different conversations that they can bring to the table. And so that's also why we need an intergenerational conversation. Mm. We need to be including those who are being affected the most by the climate crisis in these conversations. And so when it comes to climate deniers, the United States actually does have the biggest population of climate deniers in the world. And so I have had to deal with climate deniers before. I've ended up on Breitbart before with death threats in the comments. And so one thing that youth activists, we have actually really taken a focus to, is that we do not have the time to stress about those who are not believing in the science. We need to focus on bringing everybody on board and pushing for actions we need to take. What I found as well, though, is teenage girls are actually the ones changing their parents' opinion about climate change.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because, as you know, teenagers, we can be very persuasive when we're talking.
Yeah.
And so teenagers, when they're talking with their parents, they talk about how important this is to them. And that makes adults become adult allies in this movement. And that is very important. And so young people, we're starting to have these conversations about how to change the conversation.
So one question I wanted to put to you that I'm really interested in with youth climate activism, it's a little bit personal on our side. So a lot of times when I was campaigning, youth climate activism wasn't just targeted at Republicans or climate deniers. A lot of times folks would come to my events, get in the way sometimes. And I have to admit, there's a temptation to have a defensive instinct that's like, wait a minute, like the president says it's not even real. Like, I'm a Democrat, I'm progressive, I care about climate, go protest him. But of course, the folks in the movement know that, right? They understand that, you know, my party or a lot of people in my party care about the issue, but clearly are in some way not meeting the needs or meeting the expectations of the activists. So how do you choose kind of where to apply that pressure? And what is your message to people who think we're in the right place, but clearly there's something more that you're looking for? And what effect are you trying to have with that advocacy?
First of all, when it comes to campaigns and policies, young people are going to push everybody. And so actually thinking back to Jay Inslee, he was the climate candidate. But I remember when I first got in contact with him, I was actually pretty forceful. And I was actually forceful in what I wanted him to do, even though he was already pushing for climate. I still stood my ground and I said that this is the actions that you need to do. And so I think that that is one thing that young people do. We pick out those who are actually going to respond to us and incorporate actions. And those are the people that we talk to. Young people, we know the real emergency here. And so we will, when it comes to the president, we of course will also come for his policies, because don't forget the young people on TikTok organize the response we had at the Trump rally in Tulsa.
Yeah.
And so young people are organizing on TikTok and we are coming together on these social media platforms. And so we do not need a TikTok emergency. We need a climate emergency. And so we are going to be pushing from all of our politicians, the current administration, but also those who are possibly going to become the new world leaders and people in those positions of power. And so we put pressure everywhere we can. And the youth climate movement is such this vast ecosystem of youth organizations who focus on different areas of the climate crisis. So there's groups that focus on direct action, some focus on policy, some focus on voting registration. One group may be pushing a specific candidate and another will of course be pushing someone else. And so there's so many young people who have different motivations and different missions that we are going to make sure we hit every sector of our society to get climate action.
Sounds very strategic and very sophisticated, which I think we've seen in terms of the results and the impact. One of the things I've been thinking about is the way that the pandemic feels in many dimensions, as well as being obviously a colossal emergency in its own right, also kind of a dress rehearsal for climate. I mean, here you have this issue that depends on, you know, a phenomenon you can't see with the naked eye, at least in the kind of immediate instance. It has a lot to do with whether we pay attention to science. It is really going to require some level of international coordination in order to get done. It involves a lot of trade-offs, maybe false choices, but political trade-offs between kind of what looked like the right thing for the economy and what seems like the right thing for the long term. And I'm wondering whether you think that pattern is legitimate. Is there anything we're learning now from the successes or the failures in dealing with the pandemic that might shape either activism or policy for dealing with climate?
Yeah, when it came to the pandemic, one thing that we were looking at is that we saw that we had a response to it. We saw that we could respond to climate change because we had this collective response to the pandemic. So we saw how our entire system could be overhauled to address the climate crisis because we were able to do that with the coronavirus. In the future, with climate change, we're going to see so many people's lives be affected. And so there is this aspect of international action that has to be taken. So we saw the entire world really come together in this pandemic and take actions. Some countries took actions quicker than others. And so we see how we look towards those countries for examples on what we need to do. The United States, one reason why I'm always pushing us here is that we need to be setting an example, but we also need to have international cooperation when it comes in the youth movement, because sometimes we can get stuck in this little bubble here in the US and not really look anywhere else. But when it comes to climate change, we must do that.
So in terms of who gets to be in the room and also just who gets to command attention, you're 15. You've been able to clearly reach so many people and make such a difference. Do you have any advice or message to young people who maybe struggle to be taken seriously?
In the youth climate movement, we have definitely gotten into conversations where with the media or other adults where it can be there can be very patronizing conversations, like your little kids. And as well, when it comes to the youth, sometimes our words are taken out of context and we're tokenized quite a lot. And so when it comes to the youth movement, we are always making sure that our voices are the authentic ones and we are the ones that need to be at the forefront with it. And so when it comes to young people who aren't really being taken seriously, there are so many different ways for them to make their voices heard, and they have a sense there is a community out there ready to support them. And so even if there are people in their home or their community that just look at them as little kids and aren't doing anything, there are a lot that young people can do that can change the conversation at the local level. They can write emails to their city council. City council actually gets stuff done much quicker than our state at the state level or anywhere else. City council is someplace that you can go to if you want immediate action. Yeah. And so there's a lot that young people can do at the local level as well. One thing that I've seen a lot though, when it comes to youth in the movement, is often we're told by adults that, oh, you're so inspirational. Thank you for everything you're doing. And then they end up just, you know, giving us a high five and
pat on the head.
They don't actually pat on the head, and they don't actually come and support us with the resources that we need, like when it comes to funding and amplification. And so there's so much that adults can do to support the youth movement. They can actually do much more than just say we're inspiring.
I'd love to end just with your call to action. So if someone's listening, they're feeling overwhelmed, they're scared, maybe they're even struggling to be hopeful at a time like this. To folks who need some source of hope or need to feel empowered, what's your message and what's your call?
Look at your community and how are you being impacted by the climate crisis? We're seeing the effects of the climate crisis right now. It's not some future issue that we're going to be dealing with. And everybody is experiencing the effects of the climate crisis, but in different ways. Find out what you want to do about that. Are you angry and do you just want to take action, or do you want to get involved in the solutions of it and start working with your city council or getting involved in those conversations? Find a group or an organization that matches the mission that you have and what you want to pursue. And then I think the last thing to do is just start having conversations. Sometimes the feelings we feel around the climate crisis can build up and we can start to feel hopeless. But when you start talking to somebody else, your family members and your community, then it can open up much more conversations in the future, and it can make you feel more motivated to get involved.
Hearing Alexandria speak about the urgency of the climate issue and also about the specific steps needed, it really proves that you don't even have to be of voting age to have a big impact. And it's a reminder of the power that any one of us can have to make change. When you see a 13-year-old girl, as she was not long ago, step up in this way, it challenges all of us to make the most of whatever tools are in our hands. She and her community of youth climate activists have owned their power, and they're very much changing the conversation about the most existential crisis humanity has faced. It's especially helpful to hear her call to look close to home, your city council, or even your immediate family, to have important conversations that lead to change. It's a clear roadmap for how to use your power to make a difference. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.